Now, if what you do all day is mainly, mostly job, I guess that means things get paid for, well, then talk about that. But if you've got other jobs, other work that you do, maybe even other work that's at least as important as your job, you put down what you think is worth. Here, the tapes are at the end of the green board. And use the windows, paste over the windows, that's okay, but paste it so that it's visible, so folks can go around and see, and we can do a little gleaning. Something to put on the blackboard?
Thinking about it.
Okay, well.
I don't know what you mean by best and worst.
No. Best is when people say the best thing about my work is such and such. Right. You find several people saying the same thing. And then you come up here right now and put it up here.
If you find people saying the same thing, you want us to come up and put it.
Right. When you find several people saying the same thing is the best thing about their work, then you record it on the blackboard right now as you're roaming around, just pass back the blackboard, scribble the word down. You know, if they say it's, I get paid what I'm really worth, that's not very, you know, that doesn't happen very often. No, that's a good thing. If four people say that, you should write that down. Or if four people say I don't get reimbursed or remunerated, they're all up on the blackboard, on the edge of the board. Not all. Okay, whoever put teaching up, that's got to be changed. Teaching is the work somebody does. What's the best thing about teaching? That's what should be up there. Not that just I like teaching, but what is it about teaching that I like? If three people said teaching is the best thing about teaching is blah 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 blah. That's what we need. That kind of, you know, evaluation report.
But your job might be involved in a lot of things, and the thing you like best about it is the teaching part.
Then you gotta say why that's the best. What's so good about teaching? Because you just named a job, and the best thing about teaching is.
No, my job is not. That is not true. My job. The best part of my job is teaching.
Yeah, and then I'll ask you, what's so good about teaching? What is it about teaching that
teaching
turns you
kids.
On? What is it about teaching kids that turns you on?
Just dealing with kids, but I do so many things in my job that the best part.
I didn't ask you what's the best part. I'm saying what's the best thing about that part. Yeah, it sounds typically German bullheaded, but we can't work. It is, but we can't work. What's the best thing about my work is that part. What's the best thing about that part? And what's the best thing about that? See, what are you saying is my work is blah 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 and to teach.
In other words, you want a verb. You don't want a noun. You want a verb.
No, I want a verb in the number one.
Right.
But I want evaluation words in number two and three.
Right, right.
You know. That I have to work so hard, or I have to get up so early, or there's always fights going on, or I got insecurity, or there's more work to do than I got time to do, or, you know, that sort of thing. The others up there are already on that ballpark, and teaching can be, but then as soon as you stretch it out a little, what about teaching is so good, so happy? Did you put anything up on the board?
I think it takes me a couple of pages.
Did you look at all of them?
I looked.
You looked. Okay. All right. What? What's so good? No. What's so good about ministry and sex? That's it. I want some evaluative word about that. Not just the label, what it is, but what about it is good, what about it is fun. Okay, right. Why do you get jollies from ministry in a secular setting? What about ministry in a secular setting turns you on?
Oh, really? Did you take a vote? I don't know. Three boys today, and we didn't catch them. We saw a lot of them.
I'm sorry, a retired pastor didn't stay because the second last one of these I did, the retired pastor also said, I've no longer got a job, I've no longer got a career.
He's a fancy lawyer from Tacoma.
And he is retired.
He's not a preacher like you said?
No, he's a liar.
Well, I should have guessed. L-A-Y-E-R, liar. How come he's chicken?
He said that, you don't like that lawyer.
He says, I no longer have a job, I no longer have a career, but I got a calling like I never had before. He's 85 or 6 years old. He says, here in this retirement village, I'm ministering sometimes with the gospel, but often just, you know, with human care, you know, to people like I never did before. Not that my ministry, my professional church ministry was bad, but, and then he really unpacked, he really tracked his new calling at age 85, and the work he did all day. And what was good about it and what was unhappy about it as well. Okay, we've got what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on this side. Only 2 or 3, 4 maybe on the other side. It doesn't have to be there a dozen times. I'm trying to get a few more. If you just saw it twice, put it up here.
How about negative people on your worship?
Well, you've got a couple folks who've got some. If you think that's one, you put it up. I'm lazy. This is my day off. It's after 4. I never work after 4.
Maybe you do.
I guess we don't have to. It's all voluntary, you know. Voluntary. With me, it's volunteer. With you, it's voluntary. Is that the same person?
It appears on two different ones. I
but you can't see the outside.
Could be in mine too.
It's only those of us who work at all the buildings. Inside, working with no windows. It's unique to the village.
Well, let's just start with that, just to not with these people, they're gigglers, we can't do it. Maybe later on, you know, when they sober up, you know, like it's at the mountain. It's about the fourth hour of the afternoon, why are they already three sheets to the wind? Who said inside work? Where was that one? Whose was that? Oh, that was yours. Inside in the sense that you don't have windows to see out.
I have one little tiny one about this big.
And who over there said no windows? Would you just describe that a little bit? Your actual situation.
It's just a problem with my trade. I work with film and dark rooms. So
why did you drive? You picked it. What's so bad about being in a workspace where there's no eye contact with the outside for you?
I just can't describe it. I don't know. I just don't like not knowing what's going on outside. You come out at the end of the day, you don't know what the weather's been like or what's happening.
So why is that so bad for you?
I'm not sure. I just don't like it.
Why is your little narrow window a negative for your work environment?
Because I like the outdoors, especially up here, where there's so much, you know, I just like to see light. I like natural lighting. I'm an out. I feel like I'm in a cocoon almost, or in a tunnel, or in a
mine shaft.
Yeah. Any of the rest of you have any observation on that, either from your own experience, past or present, or from what you know about why people need contact with the actual natural environment, way back there and then up here?
I taught in a school of summer school didn't have any windows in their classrooms, and it was all inside. And when I got outside, it was like I felt real isolated, and it was truly a kind of loneliness and separateness from reality.
When you got outside, you felt lonely?
When I had been inside all day and got outside, it was like I had to orient myself to reality. It's too big a transition to me.
Hmm. What were you going to comment?
The lighting that's involved is bad for you. Natural lighting. There's certain body processes that the lighting is, the ultraviolet is bad for your skin. I worked in the hospital, and sometimes you have to work in the nursery, and in the nursery there's no lighting. There's no windows, there's lighting, and it's just unhealthy. Now they're putting in natural lighting and biochemical bases.
So it's not just sort of human psyche, it's part of the very chemistry of our anatomy, huh?
Yeah. I work in a hospital too, and I know that there has been studies done on intensive care patients that the first thing when people get disoriented or confused is their sense of time, and just having a window there and knowing what time of day it is and everything, it helps to keep them from being confused and lets them sleep at the right time of day.
Well, that's why I'm confused.
I suspect that's only one of the reasons why you're confused. My dear friend, I don't know much about it, but I know already too much. Well, let's just go down. As I said yesterday afternoon or evening, if we had the whole weekend, you know, we'd actually go through each sheet one-on-one and have every one of you tell us. Just sort of talk your way through the sheet. We can do that with a few of them. But I'd like to just go through this, and those of you who had something that's recorded here, would you just speak to that to say, in my case, this is what I'm talking about, so that we at least get a kind of little harvest of your own experience. If we can't read all the brown sheets, we can at least get, you know, 8 or 10 of them, or maybe there's 20 reflected in these 6 points. So let's start with the good stuff. Who's got work where helping listening to people is a plus for you? Would you please just tell us a little about it, or just describe the situation and why that's happy? Yes, sir.
For me, it's a real positive experience because often,
what do? First of all, say I'm a so-and-so. I do this, and then go to that.
Okay, I sell insurance.
Insurance salesperson.
That's right. But in talking with people, I find that, it's an opportunity for me to share and for them to share about themselves. And I think that for me, it's very interesting through my work in that. I do help people, and I can see the results of my work, sometimes not immediately, but down the road, and that's been very good for me. But I think more than that, it's just the listening to people. I think people have a need to share.
How many people, would you just raise this, how many people have something like this on the plus side of your sheet? Okay, maybe about a third of us. Okay, the rows you just had your hand up, let me just scoop through. You, and then just across. What's the situation and what's the people connection plus in your job?
Specifically? Okay.
You know, not just gobbledygook like I give you. I want raw, hard data that everyone would say, yeah, she's telling us about her life, not just general stuff.
I work in a hospital-based chemical dependency treatment program, alcohol and drug dependency. It involves, although I'm not directly doing a lot of that, I do periodically. And it's more connected to the one up there about seeing growth and change as a result of that. That's probably the best, but it's real connected to the helping and listening element.
Is there anything else about your people, about the people factor in your job, that's also a plus beyond just the fact that you can see, as you work with these folks, that plus things happen to them?
I gain a tremendous amount.
With the failures? Even with the washouts?
Sure.
How so? Because it didn't work. Your work wasn't successful. How do you still get pluses from that in your case?
Well, I see it as,
You say you can't win them all?
Well, and that you're just a link in a chain of events very often, that it's a process, not a one-time event. Okay. And you don't always know the eventual outcome. Success is measured differently.
All right. Good. You had people plus.
Right. All three of those there, helping, listening and giving help that helps others achieve, and then helping growth. I'm a speech pathologist, and I work with children in school districts who have speech and language and hearing problems. So all those go together, and you have to do, you're definitely working for changing behavior.
Can you give us a, for instance, one of the biggest joys of your work in the last month or in this year? Just a case, for instance.
I work with a lot of retarded children, although this one child was quite retarded, just having him be able to put words together in sentences for the first time and really be able to express himself in more than one word utterances is a change in his behavior that resulted from that.
Do you get properly rewarded for the work you do?
What do you mean by properly?
Whatever you mean by properly rewarded.
Not financially, no, but I have a lot of other rewards for
the job.
The feeling of seeing people change and achieve, at least move toward achieving their maximum potential in speech and language abilities.
You have that sense. Does anybody else tell you that? You get strokes from anybody?
Not many.
Really? How come?
I work in the school district. One of the minuses on my thing is a non-supportive administration in our schools.
Okay. How much ought you to get paid? Fraction-wise, how much more, percentage-wise, from what you are getting, in your judgment, to be salaried for the work you do, justly?
50%.
15? 50%. 50. Another half, okay. Other folks who had the people factor in their work. Don't be bashful, this is the only chance you'll get. Because we do something else tomorrow.
Really? I talk a lot, and I'm not.
Okay, she at least said, if she starts, she may never stop. Anyone want to get in?
People's a factor.
Okay,
work.
What is it, and what's...
I work for Boeing Company and supervise computer software development. And the particular work I'm involved in is a repetitive development activity for flying space missions. The real positive feature of it is the particular group of people that I have working for me and their attitude about the whole thing.
there's very few occasions when anybody tends to put anybody else down. If somebody makes a mistake and it fouls up schedules or whatever, everybody kind of dives in.
And they say, we'll just bill the DOD, no problem. Department of Defense.
And as a matter of fact, we do some work for the Department of Defense.
Well, I come from St. Louis, where General Dynamics is, you know.
Yeah. But it's just the whole attitude of the organization and the way people interact that makes a plus out of this particular assignment.
Did you hear this joke about computer programmers? How many computer programmers does it take to change a light bulb?
Well, it depends on which version of that
you're looking at. I've only heard one.
Let's hear your version.
Mine is zero. Okay. Because that's a hardware problem. What's your version?
Well, there's several versions. One is...
We don't have time. Give us one.
Well, one is that it takes nine.
Nine.
It takes one to write the program and eight to do the documentation. I guess back to the paperwork problem.
Okay, we'll hear out some of the rest of those in subsequent days if you're here. Any more people working, any more folks whose work is people and for whom the people factor is a plus? These three right in here. Start from the back, then you, then you, and then we'll stop that.
What do you want to know? You want to know why it's a plus, and it's also, I don't have to put it on the minus side.
Okay, what else, Paul?
I'm a special education teacher in a junior high school, and I work with kids and who are struggling, and I see them struggle, and sometimes I help them grow, and they break through and do some stuff that's good, and I teach them English, and I like to see them learn some things. I also have to work with a lot of parents, and I have to listen to them complain and bitch and carry on, and sometimes I don't like that, and so that can be a real negative part. But my rewards also come, you asked about tangible rewards, and I don't think I get paid enough either, but one of the tangible rewards I had just before school closed was that a student of mine who now graduated came back to see me, brought me his graduation picture, and we talked about what an obnoxious 7th and 8th grader he was, and now he's a finance man and graduating, and talked about what part I had in that, and that was a wonderful reward.
Major day, major week. Yeah. Major day, major week, yeah. Major semester.
And a ninth grade boy just leaving hugged me. Those were wonderful rewards.
Okay. What percentage salary increase ought you to have to be at equity scale in your judgment?
Oh, I'd say another fourth to a third.
Fourth to a third. Okay. On up.
My people factor up there is helping in the midst of helplessness. I think I would add hopelessness to that too, because I work with clients of public assistance agencies, and they're literally referred to my volunteer services program when they've got nowhere else to go. And I remember my first day on the job, March 1st, and getting a call from a caseworker who had just removed a retarded adult female from her home. She was being abused by her father. And they literally took her out with the clothes she had on her back, which was a pair of man's pants and a man's shirt. And the lady had nothing and no place else to go for it. And I felt a lot better leaving my job that day, knowing that that woman had decent clothing to at least get her through the weekend. I got far more intrinsic reward out of that than 10 years in public relations and marketing in one day.
One day.
Yeah.
Hmm. Great. Okay, we're going to put limits on you, but you do have the floor.
Okay, I'm a nurse at a hospital on the coast of Oregon. One of the positive things that I get is that we have people from other countries, Russians, and we also have people from Mexico that come up through, and I can speak both languages, so one of the positive things is that I interpret for these people in the midst of a group.
Russians in hospitals on our shore?
Yeah.
Don't they have hospitals in Moscow?
Yeah.
They get sick on the ships.
Oh, I see. The sea trade.
We have a Siemens Center.
Okay.
They go into
sure.
Interpreting 2-4. So that's positive. Another positive thing about nursing is that you have a captive audience for teaching. They can't.
I want to explain it to you.
It's true. It's true. It's a real positive thing because they want to listen.
If you don't, I'll raise the enemy even higher.
And also. Also, it's a challenge because you have diabetic people who do not want to be diabetics, but they are, and they're strapped with this, and they fight it, and so you see this maturation process in their day-to-day, and their family cohesive.
fine.
One day at a prenatal clinic, a lot of people don't have prenatal care because it's not covered under welfare, it's not covered because we have so many poor people in this, in the United States at that age group. And so I volunteer work and help those people tend to their bodies before they deliver, and then the welfare system can pick them up. And I get a lot of positive feedback from this.
Okay, we had one positive from that table, from that table, from that table, from that table. We didn't get anything from this table. One of the four of you just say something that's on, one of the positives in your work. John, yours? What's one of the pluses you got?
Well, I can resonate really to the, some of the best feelings I have are meeting the needs of people by listening to them and responding to their needs.
Okay.
In that way, I mean.
That's a plus.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just gonna do a little machine gun to get four or five more folks in. Marcia, what's one of the pluses on your sheet? A statement of what you do and then a plus.
I have a fourth grade teacher, and I think one of the pluses that I see is the ministry of the children. By that I mean they have the feelings that the kids can express and deal with and help me to deal with. I've really learned a lot from the kids.
Main job plus.
I'm Ann, and I work in an intensive care unit, and I am physically seeing the people get better is a big reward, but also
almost all of these, with this exception, are people things. Did you notice that?
Not necessarily.
Well,
giving is not just people.
Okay. See, he wants to scold me. Okay. Scold me. Tell me what you have in mind.
No, I'm just saying that giving is not necessarily just people. I think you asked several of the people here, you know, how much pay would it take to make them happy? In my job, I get to give them salary increase. Because I'm a manager.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's one of my satisfactions. It's not the only one. And certainly the people side of it is very, very important, because to see them grow, they have to grow first in a business before you can give them any salary increase.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a transition. It's a total thing with me, and I get to see both sides of it. It's not a perfect proposition, but you get to see both sides of it.
Okay, well, when I saw this up here, it says giving that helps others achieve. I gather that the others meant people, and that's why I said that's really a people one.
Yeah.
And this is a people one, and that's a people one, and that's a people one.
But people confuse, you know, people and bucks, and making the transition between people and bucks is sometimes a difficult thing.
How do you make the transition between people and bucks?
You have to in a business.
I'm not disputing that. I asked you how you do it.
You have to. You have to make a decision as to how much things are worth. It's a question of values to the business.
How do you do it? How do you do it?
How do I do it?
Yeah, can you give us a, for instance, an example? Like that case so-and-so, here's how I proceeded, that's where it came out.
How long do you want to spend?
Well, could you give it to us in a couple minutes?
No, I really could.
Okay.
Each one of those is very complicated, and I think if you're going to be sincere about it and try to do a good job of it, you just don't do it that way.
Okay, then we won't be able to do it. Who put the flexibility up there? There were a couple of flexibility folks. Would you people tell a little bit about what you do and why that flexibility is a big plus for you?
I actually, it was
name, rank, serial number.
Fred Fortine, and I work at the University of Washington in community relations. I like the flexibility because it's both the flexibility in how I do my job, which gives me a chance to be creative and do things in the way that works best with my personality. It's also flexibility in hours. I go to evening meetings quite a bit, and so I might stay home and take my son swimming to a swimming lesson before going to work and come in at 9:30 or 10:30 or 11 o'clock, and then that's okay, and I like that kind of flexibility of hours too.
What are some other pluses on your sheet, Fred? Or is that the big one?
That was really the big one. I enjoy what I do. That's a plus.
What's fun about it?
I'm often dealing with people who are angry and upset, and I see, and I often I'm the representative of the university to the around the neighborhoods around the university, and they don't usually like things like the traffic we create. And I sometimes take the flack. I don't take it personally, and I see them.
You mean you're an institutional masochist?
I'm the complaint department, yes. Yeah. And yet I see people sort of get past their sort of initial reaction and say, well, what can we do about it together? From a, you know, a point of being angry to one of saying, well, this is there something to feel frustrated about? There's something that can be done about it, and I can have a part in that, and the institution's going to have a part in that, too.
Okay. We've got about 15 minutes left, so let's at least just move to this side of the board and pick up a few of those.
Well, what I'm trying to do is just to get a little of, you know, what's out on the sheets kind of out in public. Now, you all looked at some of them, so you've got some of this public information already in your head, or at least you got a little feel for it. But what we say out loud here then is kind of reinforced that we've all kind of got that together. In preparation for step three tomorrow, for those of you who can come, to start crossing from the biblical study we did last night, that biblical text, which was over here, sort of getting our groundings in the Word of God. We asked, how's Paul himself kind of diagnosing the Corinthians' problem with his own problem sort of as a backdrop? And then to that very Corinthian and their Corinthian problem, what's Paul's proposal? How does he do Christ preaching, Christ talk for them? Maybe it's just at this point, I'll just, how many people were not, was anybody here now who was not here last night? Okay, there's 3-4 folks. Let me just walk through it then as a kind of interlude, and then we'll go to this. The way of doing the biblical study was to ask the text, what's the problem that you, St. Paul, are exposing and analyzing? And we took it down into kind of a pseudo-crypto-medical model, diagnosis, prognosis. That the initial diagnosis is that the Corinthians themselves have been either losing heart or getting ticked off that Paul's not a very hotshot apostle. And Paul is sort of defending himself, but he turns the tables and says, it's really you guys have got a problem that you don't think my ministry is as good as it was, that I'm either being a loser and you don't like losers and you don't like being losers yourself. Paul says, but in your case, in everybody, every Christian's case who loses heart about losing, that's a signal that somebody else is starting to get a hold of you again, other than the Christ, Jesus the Christ. And that is that the God of this world, and one of the gods of this world we picked up with is this big one that says, you're worth what you get, the people who achieve make it. What's your name?
Frank.
Frank was talking that way, that first people have to perform before they can get salary raises. And you got to get to know folks and to know their performance and their ability and blah, 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 all that stuff. And that's true. But if the God of this world says that's what counts, or that's how you count, then that is an alternative voice you're listening to from the voice of our Lord that says, you count because I died for you. If you want to talk about big bucks, who paid the big bucks to save you from the total wipeout? But that's, of course, what exactly the Corinthians are sliding to if they're listening to the God of this world, because the one thing all the gods of this world can't offer us is life that will last. They try, and we try various ways to lick death, to lick the final wipeout, but there's no way yet on this side of the resurrection that anybody's found except him who's been able to lick death and to be able to offer it then to other folks. Not to just say, I licked it, here's how you could do it too. You know, if I let you do this and do that and do that to that, then you could do it too. No, he says, I did it all for you and I'll just give it to you. You know, you want death survival, not death escape. You know, nobody escapes death, but the thing is, will you survive it? Will you come out on the other side? Will you be resurrected? He says, I did it and I did it for you. So if you don't hang on to that and listen to this instead of hang on to that, you wind up perishing. All the underlying words are taken right from the text itself. And that's really to be a big loser, to lose everything. The good news, in that very same text, we went through the whole chapter, and the whole chapter is basically the epistle lesson for last Sunday and the Sunday before, so we just put them together, is that this one who is the very likeness of God, the Greek word is actually icon, God's own sort of mold out of which the original stamp, the real article comes from, on the cross, the strange winning loser, and the glory that's in that, not that Jesus escaped the cross, but somehow in the cross, he did a razzle-dazzle thing that nobody else could do, and that was to rescue folks like us over here.
None of the gods of this world have ever been able to pull that off. So anybody who can pull that off, you know, he's kind of got some sparkle. You know, there should be sort of light rays, you know, flashing out from that. But Paul then says, you know, it's even better than that. When we believe that, when we trust him, then that very light, glory is a light word, starts shining in our hearts. And remember, hearts were important over there about losing heart. You get an illuminated heart. And it moves even better than that. We then have this treasure, all of this stuff, in, to be sure, our earthen vessel, a mortal body, a body that will itself die, a heart that will also get you know, coronary thrombosis and sclerosis and valve problems and the liver and the kidneys and, you know, all the rest of it will also be, is also mortal. But that new kind of earthly vessel mortality, Paul says, when you're hooked up with him, then you do your dying and rising in your body, hooked up with him. And so it's not just you getting nailed in your job or in your home or in your own problems, in your own sickness. But if you're hooked into him, it's his dying and rising and you kind of together with him doing your dying and rising. And Paul says several times, in our bodies, in our bodies. None of this spooky spiritualism. Bodily being is the way God made us, and that's where the goodies either happen or they don't happen. And Paul punches that over and over again several ways. With this phrase, earthen vessels, he means, you know, stuff that finally go back to the dirt. Dust thou art, and dust thou thou return. That's the root word that's in that Greek thing. Okay, so that's the biblical grounding that we eventually want to get across to each one of our sheets. And since we've got a big bunch here, I don't exactly know how to proceed tomorrow, but I'll work on it. We'll probably just do a case study with one or two of you, ask you to come up here, and we'll just bring your sheet up here and we'll sort of work on it. And then maybe for the last half hour say, okay, since you saw how we did it here in plenary, now let's see what we can do on your table together, three or four of you together work on it, or something like that. But the intention is that every one of you would at least be able to get some kind of crossing from this word of God to your daily work. At least a little bit, so that you don't go away with nothing. Sometimes it clicks, sometimes it doesn't. I should also add that since I'm around here as a teaching staff on through this week and next week, if we don't make connections, you know, during the time together here, I'll be glad to sit and shop talk with any one of you when you and I've got some free time together, and I've got lots of free time. In fact, all of it's free. I don't get paid for any of it.
Okay. Well, you see the things that are up here. I just asked for 3, 4, 5 of you to just comment on something about your work that's a baddie that you'd really like to pinpoint. That either is a unique example of the long hours, the conflict, the paperwork, the stress time conflict, the powerlessness, the inside work, no windows, we touched that a little bit, negative people, the bureaucracy, endless tasks, loneliness. Give me something on bureaucracy. Who's got the bureaucratic situation? You talk once. Sorry. Anybody who's bureaucratically strapped? How do you get two of them up there then? How about bureaucracy at Holden Village? I know you can't say that, but Elmer isn't listening.
Shut off the tape recorder.
Is there bureaucracy here? Is it?
It's very informal.
Informal bureaucracy. Does that make it any better?
It's you know, it's not written. But there are traditions that are sort of...
There are understandings.
Things that you just do or don't do.
Right.
Things that you go, you know, people you go through to do.
Yeah.
Okay. How about... Who put conflict? Or on whose chart is something like conflict? Would you speak up to that? John?
In adult education in the church, those people who I classify from... I bark, therefore I am. The crocodiles.
I bark, therefore I am. He says that's their motto. How do you cope with that conflict at present, John?
By ignoring it initially and talking to them afterwards.
Okay.
Love it.
Powerlessness. Whose is that? Would you say a little what you do and what the powerless factor is?
I'm a nurse practitioner at Oregon Health Sciences University, so it really fits into a big bureaucracy.
Okay.
Those two fit well together. What I hate about it is that as an individual, you can have lots of good ideas, but my job description isn't defined by myself, it's defined by a doctor, some other superior. So to be able to move around creatively and change that, adapt it as I see fit, you know, I don't have that right. I don't have that ability to do that.
What would happen if you did it anyway?
Probably would throw the whole schedule off, because I need to see people every 30 minutes. And so if I change it the way I want to and it takes me, you know, 40 minutes or an hour, I'd lose my job, I'm sure.
Why do you have to see people every 30 minutes?
Because that's what's cost-effective. Cost-effectiveness is a big click word. You know, you have to generate money and make sure that...
Since we've got a number of people from the healthcare professions here, I'm surprised those... What are those three letters now that are...
DRG.
DRG. That DRG wasn't up here all over the place. Or isn't DRG...
It's under bureaucracy.
Isn't DRG itself the bad thing? Is something else the bad thing, and DRG is just a...
What's DRG?
Diagnostic-related.
Now somebody define that, now that you told us what it is. Yeah. What is diagnostic-related for hair? You're talking, what's DRG?
Okay, what it is a person comes into the hospital, they have to have a diagnosis, and they ascertain that a diagnosis of a myocardial infarction should be treated and out of the hospital in 14 days. And everything
else. What's a myocardial infarction?
A heart attack. Okay. So somebody
speaking the language, we can understand.
So somebody has a heart attack, they're supposed to get out of the coronary care units, through the rehab, and out the door in set amount of time. I don't know what they do. You probably do. So then the hospital only gets so much money. If they take longer with that patient, the hospital has to pay for the services. Medicare, Medicaid will not cover it after that, and the hospitals go broke. So they're, you know, hot on your heels to get such and such and such and such done. And you can't have two diagnoses going in at the same time. So you will discharge a person, and then doctors will turn around and readmit them a day or two later for their peptic ulcer disease. You know, and then it's a real crazy sort of tunnel visioned approach to healthcare.
Now, were hospitals humane before DRG came from Washington?
This is just Medicare.
This is Medicare. Yeah. But
this is government supported. Government subsidized Medicare.
Yeah, it's going to go all the way through.
Who were the negative people? Who's the negative people sufferer? Yes, sir. Would you tell us your work and what the negative people factor is?
I'm Ron Furch, and I'm a building materials broker. People that are just not knowledgeable in their field. I don't feel like my work is really very much work. But when you meet people, and I'm sure we all do, and that won't listen, do things wrong, and it's just a matter of time before their particular job is screwed up.
How do you cope with that factor?
I kind of walk away from them, and there's a unfortunate I deal with not just the superintendent, but with the owners. Subcontractors, and you really almost bypass them. It's not the easiest way, but
if you can walk away from them, why is that such a big negative? You know, they say I get kicked, or you know, I mean, they threaten to kick me, but I just walk away, so I come out, you know, scot free.
It's like a building anything; it goes up in a sequence, and if you get a dummy that leaves out of sequence, you know it's just a matter of time before something falls down. And you go back and do it over.
Okay.
Anything in the building business or any business, when you get proficient, you do it one time well and then go on and do another one.
Okay. Is there a comment coming from the knitter?
No, he's talking to me.
Well, I thought I saw your hand up before he squelched you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't think
what do you do for work?
Well, I'm a family therapist.
What's the best thing and worst thing about that for you?
Well, part of the best thing is that for a long time I was on the receiving end of that, and I was a patient, and so it makes sense out of the emotional pain that I have been through in my life. But the worst thing is I don't get distant, and there was a lot of doubt for me about whether I should ever do that.
Don't get distant from what?
When they talk about something that's very familiar, especially if...
That's been part of your biography, maybe?
Oh, boy. And almost everything they talk about is. Then I get... That's so my business. You know, I do a whole lot of the dying part. And not enough...
Okay.
Yeah, and
so you're on this chart already.
Yeah.
In terms of need.
Oh
and,
yeah,
okay.
That really made me feel good. But I see that I do it too much.
Class dismissed. You know, you're on.
Well, that I get too identified, and then I feel guilty, and then I try to rescue the teenage kid that the father says is crazy when the father's the one with the biggest problem. The other part is very lonely. If I can't talk small talk anymore, you know, I intuit what somebody's hang up is, and then I try, I just, that's a real dilemma.
Who else has got loneliness as a negative effect in your work in some form or other? Or just, if you did, even if you didn't write it, if not that she's mentioned, you say, you know, that's a negative in my work too. You got loneliness with all those Russians and Meghan? It's not like you got the international, you know, You can solve the world's problems, you know, Latin America, the Russians. What else is there? What else is there?
This is the one she can't communicate, the Japanese.
That's both east-west and north-south. That's the whole ball of wax. Well, how's it lonely for you?
I'm a well-educated person, and it's real hard to find somebody to do this kind of stuff with. And I enjoy interaction.
Okay, the bell's going to ring in a minute or two. What about this sort of endless tasks and long hours? That sounds at least in the same ballpark. Whoever had that, would you speak up and say a bit about that? Marcia, school teacher, fourth grade, Chicago, Illinois.
I put in so much time that I've never finished, and it's so frustrating for me. I can never really say that I'm done.
Who in this room can say, for the most part, I get my work done in the time that I've got to do it? The broker. Let's all move to brokerage. So that's 43. That's about 28 people's problem. How do you cope with that?
I guess I don't.
Well, you must, because you're here. You took a vacation. You didn't stay home and say, now I can catch up.
Well, but I'm thinking, see, I've got all these months.
You didn't leave it
at home? I didn't leave it at home.
Lake Chelan is there for you to drown all those things in. That's why it's below sea level. If you drop it in there, it goes below the sea level. It's just out of, literally, it's almost off the planet. Who else has got too much work, not enough time? You please. What's the work? What's the situation?
Well, I'm a homemaker, and my situation is that all of my neighbors are working women, and therefore I've not found the need to go out and work in the working world. Mm-hmm. And my long hours and endless tasks, well, I'll just put that off until tomorrow, and I've always got it tomorrow to do something in. I never get everything all cut out.
So what? Right. Sounds like you're still alive. And,
I'm still here.
And,
nobody's I'm going to take that hike tomorrow.
There you go. You sound like a woman who's being resurrected right here. You know? Maybe even with the Lord's help. How about you?
I think she handles that job like I handle my same problem. It's a case of priorities. And it's sort of, I determine the priorities, my bosses determine priorities, and whoever hollers the loudest wins out, usually my bosses. But it's a matter of just setting priorities and doing what you can do, and making sure that nothing major drops through the cracks.
How many in this group have got what you would say a good boss or superior? You know, somebody who's your supervisor who evaluates you, about a third of you. How many say, I really got a bad boss, or push come to shove, it's not very good? Huh. Gee, don't let that message get back to the Middle West. They'll all emigrate out to Oregon anyhow. That's true, huh? Nobody's got a bad boss. In fact, I don't believe that, but you got a good bishop?
Yep.
Paul.
And that you chose to be an educator about this is stuff you never have a chance to do.
How many of you are bugged by all that idiot work you got to do? At least the big chunks of it. Ooh, lots of you. You know, dumb work, but somebody says I got to do it. If I don't, you know, I'll get whacked.
The stress comes from sometimes a lot of personal stress, at least for me. My own expectations, like I go into a classroom and I
teach, and I'm a good teacher, and I have a lot of experience, so I can wing it a lot. But I just get real upset because I know that I could do so much better, and if I had time to, you know, really prepare some good stuff. But I just keep falling back year after year on some of the stuff. And sometimes I do some other stuff, but, you know, it's just always that. It's never, we're talking about jobs never being done. It's just those kinds of creative things that are never done.
Okay, the bell hasn't rung yet. Who is bugged by the paperwork? Must have been more than one of you. All those reports that this guy, Paul says to you, yeah. Let's just take these two here, yours and yours.
Well, being in a hospital setting, lots of documentation, meeting standards for your accrediting agencies and state approval kinds of things. And it requires a great deal of time that there's very little reward from, or anybody even ever notices or reads or bothers with.
Is yours the same or yours the
same? Well, in special education in schools, you work under the federal law 94-142, which requires all kinds of quadruplicate paperwork for everything you do with a kid.
Do you realize that at the technical term, that's what the word bureaucracy means in terms of business in terms of the organization of work? Bureaucracy is a technical term for a particular way that work is organized, and it's a modern world phenomenon. Most of you know that your grandfather or your father, grandfather, great-grandfather, whatever work they did, it was not bureaucratically organized, I'm guessing. But it was much more one-to-one relationship, either with folks that worked for him or that he worked for. There might even have been a foreman in between. What's the fact, what's the new factor in bureaucratic organization of work that's different from either of the, there are actually two different kinds preceding that, they say.
Written rules.
Right, the insertion of paper.
Copy machines.
Well, no, those are copy machines just exacerbate. It's literally the insertion of paper between people in how work is organized. Mm-hmm. You got to fill out forms. The job has a job description. Previously, people worked together, and rather complex things apparently got done, like, you know, building pyramids and whatnot. And they did not have paper between people. That's often a part of the frustration because you're mad as hell about something. And you can't get a fair hearing because whoever you're graduating to says, well, look, the specs say so-and-so. And you never argue with, you never get a chance to argue or show your case to the person, but you're always showing this piece of paper that's got something written on it, and you can't argue with that piece of paper because it doesn't talk back. It just says, or something like that. That's not the whole ball of wax, but that's sort of the fundamental, almost physical fact, the insertion of paper between people in the organization of work. Well, there's the bell. Y'all can still get in the first sitting if you want. We'll pick up as much as we can from the tracking of your world of work to make some crossings tomorrow with 2 Corinthians chapter 4.